What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Crime Scene Queens. We are the show to listen to if you want to hear from the real experts in the field. You know, the experts that have like this true understanding of confidentiality and respect for the deceased and their families. And we're not going to exploit the victims. Why? Well, because we're not your typical true crime podcast.
No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that today because that's how you get yourself in trouble. Just like all of those people involved in the Dahmer show. Everybody's pissed off about them. All those victims are mad.
True story.
Poor Evan Peters. I like him.
That's because we're respectful.
Today, Shelley, we're talking about some of our craziest evidence collection stories. And a way I thought that we could kind of get the ball rolling is I did pose to our social media community, hey, guys, what is your craziest collection story? Several of them involved animals. Do you want to hear some? And actually, I posed this to all listeners in case they're involved in anything. I said, what's the craziest piece of evidence that you've collected? And a lot of them were animals. In fact, this one person said that the craziest piece of evidence they had collected was a live raccoon in a motel room that was next to a dead body. And they said that the little footprints from the raccoon were in the decomp fluid.
Wow.
I know.
But wait a second. How's that evidence?
I guess they collected the animal. I don't know. Listen, I did not have the opportunity to do further questioning. This was literally like an Instagram story that I popped up as a question box and people filled it out. Damn.
But we're good in this field. So I just kind of want to problem solve and like troubleshooting this. I'm totally derailing us and I sincerely apologize. But there's a dead body. They already know who the body is. But maybe they collected that. You said it was a squirrel or raccoon.
A raccoon, but they didn't say they know who the body was. Like maybe because it was a decomp, it was still a case for ID. Who knows? Well, also, why did this person have a raccoon in the hotel room with them?
Well, and how come there's no one going in there to like clean the hotel room? They get like COVID, but still they do it like once or twice a week. Maybe it's one of those live-in places.
Maybe like long-term hotel rooms.
Yeah, maybe like the window was open or something. And so that allowed the raccoon to come in.
Well, here's the other one though.
Yeah, tell me that.
Raccoons also have thumbs. Okay, so this other crime scene investigator writes me, and she says that they were searching through dumpsters for the suspect's firearms. And while they were digging in the trash, they were on an active shooter scene. So that being the case, the CSI was decked out in like a ballistic helmet, and they found a ferret in the trash. And they literally were teasing the CSI that they had found a pet to bring home with them as they were uncovering, looking for this gun. Like, can you imagine just pulling a ferret out of the garbage?
My friends all had ferrets growing up because I didn't grow up in California and they were legal in Colorado. But if you don't know a ferret and you just reach in, that little shit's going to bite you.
It is.
They're really sweet, but you know, they are feral animals. They're weasels and they will bite you.
So then the other one was somebody wrote that this is not an animal. A zucchini was brought to a crime scene and left there by a burglar. They like brought their lunch with them into the house they were burglarizing. That's ridiculous.
That's not even like a dine and dash. What is that?
It's literally, who knows what they were going to do with it? Who knows?
Zucchini reminds me of Greek food.
Not based on one of my zucchini stories I have coming up.
Oh, I'm excited.
All right. Another one that somebody submitted was a rotary phone from 1976. They lifted a print off of it and they got an aphis hit. But this rotary phone was in like 2004, well past the age of that.
That is so funny.
I know.
In our office, we have a red phone. And literally, I was just talking to one of the receptionist ladies about it. It's a red phone and it's not rotary. It has push buttons. And this red push button phone, I'm like, what the hell? Is this like our launching bomb phone? What is this? And she was like, no, in case our phones go down, we have this red phone. And I was like, does it even work? I've been there 17 years. She's been there for like a year and a half.
Yeah, it seems like a doomsday phone.
Yeah, she's been there for a year and a half. And she goes, oh, it's rang once since I've been here. I'm like, what? It rang? Who knows the number?
Did anybody pick up?
I don't know. I was so like, I don't even know what the hell she just said right now. And I walked away because I was like, huh, scratching my head.
I immediately need to know who called the phone.
Yeah.
Who, like, just gives that kind of information and then steps away from it?
Who has the phone number?
You should pick up the phone and then call somebody. And so then you'll have the number for the phone, and then you can prank your whole
office. So I could call myself. Anyway, so enough about, like, the bat phone. How about these planes, trains, and automobiles? And how are they related to this episode?
I don't know.
Well,
tell me.
Okay, so how and what do you collect from large, like, wreckage sites from, like, attacks or blasts or big, huge collisions, that type of stuff? Items and objects. Yeah, how do you collect a plane or a train or a huge automobile or whatever? Because the local garages aren't big enough to house these ginormous things.
It depends on your agency, but yeah.
Dude, you're telling me that you have a hang glider garage?
At my first agency, we had a really large vehicle garage. We had a separate crime scene processing garage, but if we had needed the other one, we probably would have had use of it.
Oh, that's cool.
But that's not normal.
Well, yeah, totally not normal. So, fun fact, it is an attack or a blast, like a bombing, for instance. First, you have to render the site safe. And then if a local agency doesn't have its own specialized unit, then they'll contact a nearby bomb squad.
Yep.
Which is pretty awesome, because I think I know that you have a cool bomb story.
Well, it's not as cool as it should be, but essentially we do have, like, the local sheriff's office has a really good bomb squad. So we call them whenever we have a reporting of a self-made explosive device. And there is a Catholic church very close to our police department at the time. And the head pastor's office was, like, adjacent to the main doors of the main worship center or chapel, and there it was actually glass windows. And I guess he was sitting in there one night and he saw this weird contraption that kind of looked like a soda bottle. And upon further observation, he noticed that there were, like, components to it. There was tin foil, there was powders, there was all these different elements of it. So he got freaked out and he called us. And I got there and I documented the scene and I'm like, I hope nobody thinks I'm getting near that or touching it or disabling it. Like,
yeah, no.
Like, it looks super shady.
Okay, hold on. So he obviously probably calls 911 because he's like, there's a suspicious package or soda looking, like, whatever he says.
Explosive device.
So, okay, I don't get it. Why wouldn't they call the bomb squad?
Let's not Shelley? Yeah, let's not go too crazy about the expectations of other people that should know better, okay? Like, I mean, I think that they say it in Men in Black, that a person is an intelligent, free-thinking thing, but people are dumb and sheep, right? Like, when you put them together.
Yes.
So he calls, he reports this thing, everybody responds, he gets safely removed from the building. He's not a very popular priest. He's not well-liked, and people can, with all religions, get a little nuts about their religion. Literally every religion has this. So don't think I'm hating on anybody. And we get there. I document the device. I keep my freaking distance. My camera has a zoom lens. And then at some point they called the bomb squad and they came out. They determined that it wasn't even good. It was, like, a really shifty one. Like, basically the person couldn't even Google properly. They, like, had all the right components, but they, like, what was supposed to happen was, in theory, the tin foil would have dropped into the liquid and powders contained inside of the soda bottle, and it would have boomed. If somebody walked up to it and say, like, hey, what's this, it would have exploded, which is why they put it right outside of his office. So they end up figuring out that it was completely, like, defunct. However, the contents of it were still explosive materials. So they were like, oh, well, we're not collecting that. And I'm like, I'm not collecting that.
Yeah, no.
If you take those explosive materials out of there, your lab processes them, I will collect, like, the soda bottle and the masking tape, and I'll collect prints from that or DNA. But I'm not collecting any of those powders or any of that liquid.
No.
And they're like, well, it's not our case number. I'm like, this is outside of what we do. We do not collect explosive materials in the crime scene unit. That's beyond us. We don't have the proper material handlings, containers. Yeah. And how are we even going to dispose of it? So the bomb squad ends up taking it and pouring it out in the parking lot.
What?
And I was like, I'm writing it in my report. I'm not getting in trouble for this. They poured it into the parking lot. Not like together. What? I don't know how. I just remember like watching
that's
them dump
like
it out.
Hazardous material. You don't know what that is. You can't do that.
You bet your butt. Ugh. I wrote it in my report. And I collected the soda bottle, the 2-liter soda bottle, and I collected the masking tape. And for those of you that are curious how I would process items of evidence like that, for the soda bottle, I used something called cyanoacrylate fuming. And what cyanoacrylate means is super glue. And what you do is you put your item of evidence in a hood, like a scientific hood.
Like a big, clear lockbox type.
Yeah,
thing.
I've actually, you know, we've even made ones for the field out of empty fish tanks, like anything that contain a fume. And then you'll take a little bit of super glue in like a little aluminum foil dish that they pre-make, and you put it on a heater to the point where the super glue becomes a gas rather than a liquid, and then it fills the air, and then you have the container or the fuming hood or this fish tank, and the elements of your fingerprints are 98% water, and the other 2% are like amino acids and other secretions, but those elements actually makes your fingerprints three-dimensional. So the super glue fumes start to cling to the friction ridge detail that is deposited on our items of evidence. So if you want to think about laminating only on a like a much tinier level, so I super glue fumed or cyanoacrylate fumed the soda bottle, and then I would have applied a black fingerprint powder. There are other colors besides black.
I'm going to back you up for a second. So once you super glue fume the soda bottle, the print becomes white.
It becomes so it like white. That's right. You know how like when you were little, when you got glue on your hand, it turned white and you peeled it off?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's like that.
Well, I'm still little, so that means that I can still do it. And so I'm justified because I still do it.
But you know how when you peeled it off your fingers, you could see your prints in it?
Yep, absolutely. Didn't know that they were called friction ridges back then, but
friction ridge detail and minutia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like only without peeling it off. So you would leave the print on the item of evidence.
And then you black powdered it.
Black powdered it, but just for those of you who are curious about fingerprinting, there are many colors of fingerprint powder. There's even dual contrast fingerprint powder. So if you think about reflective surface.
And magnetic.
But what you want to do is find the color that will create the highest contrast with the background of that print. So this soda bottle, I can't remember if it was clear or green. But either way, black powder was more than sufficient to create the contrast that I needed. And I'm glad you brought up magnetic powder. So for those of you who might be wondering what that is, if you want to think about fingerprint powder that actually has a bit of a magnetic charge, the way that we apply and utilize this fingerprint powder is actually with a magnetic wand. Like, have you ever had, what is that little game where you can like drag the little magnetic pieces and put like a mustache on them? Or an etch-a-sketch. Or
etch-a-sketch.
When you put the mustache on the guy and you can like drag it around.
Yeah, maybe.
So we have an actual little magnetic wand.
We need listener help on that one. I don't know what it's called.
I know. I love magnetic powder. So you would take, like there would be a normal jar full of the magnetic powder. The way that you would know that it was magnetic versus a regular graphite-based fingerprint powder is it is way heavier. Because it's actually like fragmented little like magnets. So you take your magnetic wand, you dip it in there. It creates this cool like spiky cylinder of the, and then you very lightly apply it onto the surface that you want. The reason why I bring this up is because magnetic powder is really great for producing fingerprint powder, latent fingerprints off of like masking tape or like that silver contractor's tape, but you would not do that on the sticky side.
Duct tape.
Thank you, Shelley. Duct tape. That's the word I was looking for. I knew I was saying the wrong thing. Not masking tape, duct tape. So you would take the non-sticky side and look for fingerprints with the magnetic powder on that side. On the sticky side, we have something called wet wop.
Yes. Wet wop.
I love wet wop.
I love wet wop.
I know. Wet wop. So wet wop is really cool. You essentially it doesn't have the same consistency, but it's like black paint, and you paint it on the sticky side surface of the duct tape, and then you dip it in a sterile rinse, and then the fingerprint, the wet wop will stick to the fingerprint elements that I was discussing earlier, but all the rest of the wet wop will wipe away. So I had all of those collection methods to get prints off of the non-explosive elements of this makeshift bomb.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Someone didn't like that priest and decided that's what they were going to do.
Yeah, but they didn't even do a good job. And that's like a pretty serious crime to like put a bomb at a religious center. I think that ups the ante a little bit, Shelley, right? To a place of religion.
Yeah, when you do it to a place of religion, then they consider it a hate crime and they can do an additive on it.
Yeah. Yeah, legal people. Crazy. Come on. You can't do it to anybody.
Can't do it to anyone, but when you do it to certain people, then, you know, it's definitely not okay.
It's like hospitals, religious centers.
Schools, that type of stuff.
Old, like nursing homes, assisted living facilities.
You were talking about how it was a man-made
improvised
device.
Explosive device.
Exactly. So IEDs are improvised explosive devices, and these are usually analyzed by like FBIs or terrorist explosive. Actually, it's TDAC. So it's the Terrorist Explosive Device Analytical Center is who takes all these things. And they're located in Quantico, Virginia. And did you know that IEDs collected from around the world are sent to TDAC for forensic examination? So every other country all around the world, they all go to Quantico, Virginia.
I actually did not know that.
Little
because they poured
of-
our IED out on the street. So they did not send it to Quantico. They poured it out on the street.
99.9% of all IEDs go to Quantico, Virginia. The 0.1% gets poured out in the parking lot.
Gets poured out in the parking lot of the church. Okay, so we're talking about like random freaking places to find evidence, random crazy pieces of evidence. I know that you and I have both discussed that we've had to collect entire walls, entire doors, entire mattresses.
Being 5 feet tall, collecting California king size mattress. Yeah, we're just going to take the whole thing and you're like, how? Me?
I imagine that it looks like those little ants with the breadcrumbs that are like five times bigger than their bodies.
Well, obviously, if there was more than one, but it's like, yo, bro, can you lend a hand over here? My wingspan is not, I couldn't.
Yeah, you couldn't quite grab
it. I don't want blood and the semen and the other juices.
Any of it.
Ugh.
I know.
Yeah, you don't want to touch that.
Yeah, I've gone and bought like one of those full zip mattress protectors to collect it before. Did that. And then, guys, just to be transparent, most of the time that I've had to collect, I would say, I think it's every time I've had to collect an entire mattress, unfortunately, we're talking about cases of sexual assault. Because there is one other time where I was asked to collect a mattress, and can you believe it, Shelley? I said, absolutely not. Do you want to know why?
Yeah, I'm like dying. I'm like, why did you say no?
So this guy lived in a drug house with all of his other drug dealer friends, and systematically, one by one, they all got arrested, and he was the last one standing that wasn't in prison or jail, and he ended up overdosing and dying in his bed, but nobody was coming home because they were all incarcerated. So at some point, he started to decompose because, of course, they weren't paying their bills, because sometimes when people are in the throes of drug sales or addiction, they don't think to take care of any elements of their life. So no AC. No electricity.
In Florida.
It's Florida. So he starts to decompose. And what happens is all of the neighbors start to smell it. And they start calling the city, like, there is an odor coming from this house. So we responded. I want you to think about what a sponge does. And I want you to think about the fact
it absorbs.
It absorbs. And I want you to think about the fact that a mattress
is, like,
is essentially a sponge. Listen, this bed, I think, had a sheet on it, like a sheet, not like layers of bedding. But even if it had, it would have soaked through. So this dude dies. And it is one of my more memorable decomps because he was largely skeletonized at this point, but the mattress had absorbed all of that decomposition fluid, Shelley.
The smell.
The smell this time. The sight of it looked like something that Eli Roth, or like one of those crazy like directors, like Rob Zombie's crazy movies. Like, it looked like TV. because of just like the colors in the mattress. And the
was it like that yellow and that like grayish?
And it was like thick.
Yeah.
Like the mattress like oozing the decomp fluid because it had all gone into the mattress. He wasn't a large man.
But I'm sure that the mattress wasn't like the extra thick pillow top, whatever.
It was so
standard.
Eventually, the medical examiner comes and the victim is relatively easy to collect or transport because he's largely skeletonized. Like he still had enough soft tissue or connective tissue on him to like when we removed him from the room, he didn't fall apart. There was still like content.
Okay.
Let's just call it content because I don't want to say anything inconsiderate. But then somebody's like, yeah, you're going to collect that. Excuse me? I'm going to collect this mattress must weigh. I mean, I literally was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
What would the point be?
What are we trying to prove with the collection of this mattress that pictures, like I have literally never said no to collecting evidence. I just said, I can't. Where's it going to go? Property and evidence unit can't take this. It's a huge biohazard.
Yeah, you get a flatbed truck to haul it away.
And just for the stream of thought that some of you guys might be thinking about, like evidence, yes, we do collect saturated evidence. However, there is usually a reason that we're collecting it. So, for example, if somebody's clothing has bullet defects or identifying information and they are a decomp, and let's just say like the items of clothing might help us when we're describing these things to a family member or friend as we try to figure out who they are. If we see any evidence of any victim's clothing, we're always going to take. A lot of times their clothing is in the same condition as the mattress. However, we have a special cabinet where we dry these items, properly package them with butcher paper, separating the layers to prevent cross-contamination and cross-transfer of stains. I cannot do that with an entire mattress. And this man literally overdosed. There was evidence of the overdose.
Yeah.
There was no evidence of a struggle. This house was secure when we got there. It was locked. I was like, I absolutely not collecting this mattress. Like, and if it had been a homicide, we got to figure this out, okay? And you're supposed to treat every case like a homicide. However, the CSI that makes 40 grand a year has boundaries, and that was a boundary. Like, I'll do anything for a victim, but this was just, like, not going to happen.
So you were talking about how it was, like, a drug house and, you know, how the criminal was living there with all of his criminal buddies and stuff.
Yeah.
That brings up, like, a story that I thought about. So that's not cool when you have fourth waiver searches, because fourth waiver, you give up your right to unreasonable search and seizure, so they just come in whenever they want and take a look at...
Fourth waiver? Or you mean Fourth Amendment?
It's they're called Fourth waiver searches. It's the Fourth Amendment.
I've never heard it said that way, actually. I've heard they reference the Fourth Amendment, but I've never heard it said fourth waiver, so that's interesting.
Oh, yeah, we call them for short, we call them fourth waivers.
Okay.
And so we had one time, and so, you know, odd, crazy places that people are hiding evidence, right? So... There's a fourth waiver search. Guy is nothing here. Go ahead, search everywhere, search whatever. And he's got his family, his mom, his wife, his kids, whatever. And one of the kids is sitting on the couch and, you know, our guys come in and they're going to do the fourth waiver search and they're looking for drugs. They're looking for, you know, stuff because he's on parole. And so they look, they search and they're just like, this is a good sting operation. They know that there's something in there, but they just don't know where.
And the intuition.
Well, intuition and a little bit of secret squirrel type stuff. Yeah. So some of the things we can't quite talk about because we can't give away all of our secrets. So a little kid is sitting on the couch holding a teddy bear. It's their teddy bear, right? It's like 9 o'clock at night. And I'm sure now the audience knows exactly where this is going.
Uh-huh.
Well, they can't find any drugs. So then they bring the dog in and the dog immediately goes to the teddy bear.
I knew you were going to say that.
So they... First, they're like, the kid, like, what's happening? So then they have the child stand up. Child's still holding the teddy bear. Child stands up and the dog is, like, sniffing and then sits as soon as it comes around to the teddy bear. Sniffs the teddy bear and sits. And they said, I'm sorry, we're going to have to take the teddy bear. So that sucks, right? Because now you got this kid crying because we just took your teddy bear. And we're going to take your teddy bear and we're going to go destroy it because there's drugs inside of it. So that's exactly what happened was there was drugs inside and the dog came in and they ripped the bear to shreds because they found
Yeah.
Drugs. So happy moment is then one of our guys actually had a little teddy bear in his car and he gave it to the kid. And,
actually,
kid appreciated it.
We did have at my second PD in the victim's rights room, there was a whole bunch of stuffed animals, not just bears. And everybody that worked there was encouraged to keep a few in our vehicles in case there was a child that needed.
For any reason, if there was.
For any reason.
Yeah,
so it was
exactly,
actually really nice. The softer side of law enforcement. One of my PDs has now acquired a therapy dog that they bring with them to
The hospitals and stuff.
I think that it can literally respond anywhere it's needed. So if there are victims at the hospital or victims' families at the hospital or the home or wherever at the PD, if like a child has to be interviewed, the dog can be there.
That's
so it's really
awesome.
Nice.
That's really cool. I've had some pretty crazy things. You know, I mean, obviously in the jails, there is so much stuff that's just, there's a ton of stuff that gets hidden in the jails. It's, you know, definition time, the jail or the prison purse.
You've said this to me before. You are so bad. I didn't know this until you taught me. I'm going to let you tell our audience that you are bad. No.
Oh my God.
Not a Louis Vuitton, guys. The prison purse is not a Louis Vuitton.
It's the furthest thing from a Louis Vuitton. And if you think yours is a Louis Vuitton, you crazy. So a jail or a prison purse is either male or female, and it's the genital orifice of either a male or a female. So we're talking, you know, rectum or a vagina to use to conceal contraband. And it's prohibited items from custody. So a lot of times it's drugs, but sometimes it can be keys to handcuffs. Yeah, pretty crazy.
I do have a butthole story, but it's not a prison butthole story. Okay, so when I was at UCSI, I was on one of my very first death investigation calls. And I was still nervous at the time, still insecure about, you know, my way of going about scenes. I wanted a lot of validation from my coworkers, which I had for like 3 months. I just wanted to know that I was doing justice in my role and that I wasn't missing anything. So I had taken all of my pictures. I had done everything on my side. The death investigator came. At some point, one of the detectives said to me, well, have you looked for the carrot yet? And I said, what? And they're like, well, did you look for the carrot? I said, what carrot? And then they all start laughing at me. And my lieutenant is on scene and he's like, yeah, you always got to look for the carrot.
What carrot?
I'm about to tell you. Apparently, long before my time, when my lieutenant was a detective, he showed up to a death investigation. I don't know at what point in time the crime scene unit was developed, because crime scene is a lot newer of a field than people think. And so they sent the body down to the medical examiner office and they call him and they said, hey, did you guys examine this body? And he's like, yeah. And they said, well, did you examine the body without their clothes on? Because just so everybody knows, not to be disrespectful to the victim, but it's very appropriate to do a thorough investigation to take photographs of the victim on scene, largely naked. Okay. Largely naked. It's just to make sure there's nothing that we're missing that could alter the search of the rest of the scene. So he says, did you do a thorough search of the victim's body? Did you do it naked? And he's like, yeah. Okay, great. Because there's a carrot in this victim's asshole. So it ends up being a homicide, where there was a dispute and the lover shoved a carrot in this person's butthole before they killed them. And so that's super embarrassing for the lieutenant at the time, because he literally had blown off this scene, which is why you never do that. That's why it's every case, every time, ethically and professionally. So super embarrassing. Sent this poor homicide victim down to the ME without a proper investigation. And ever since then, they always would say, did you check for the carrot? Because you've got to flip the victim over and photograph their posterior or backside as well. So my carrot story wasn't that I put a carrot in an asshole or removed a carrot from an asshole. But for the rest of my tenure at that PD, I did check for a carrot in the asshole.
Wow. Wow. That's
so we've gone from animal to vegetable now.
It works. Totally works. That's fine. I have so many more stories, but there's been some crazy stuff that we've seen and heard about mm-hmm. in the jails. You know, imagine when you swallow something, you know, speaking about carrot, right? Like corn,
yep.
when you swallow something and you eat it,
corn.
Well, everything shall pass. And usually what people do is they will swallow drugs.
Right.
And that way, when they go to jail, they will pass
them out.
And poop hopefully them. Then they will be able to use them while they're in jail. So hopefully the audience is, they're getting it because you're sitting here behind me saying, I poop them. They're going to poop them.
So,
yes. Yeah, they're going to swallow the drugs and then they're going to take the drugs and it's going to go through their system. And because your body can't digest some of that stuff, it just passes it and it passes it usually whole.
Yeah, they like eat it in a balloon, right? They put it in like a little balloon or a little condom or something stupid.
Balloons, condoms, baggies. Yeah.
Stuff your body doesn't want to digest.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And so when this happens, then, you know, you pass it. And then when you pass it, obviously, you know, you're digging through your own feces. And so you get it. And because it's super sanitary to do this, obviously, clean it off, you unwrap it. And then, you know, you have contraband, you have drugs. Well, little do criminals know, guess what? We have body scanners that actually detect the drugs and they see them now. So don't do it.
So there's no more bend over and cough.
Oh, we do the bend over and cough, but some people practice that. I mean, it's just like FSTs, like field sobriety tests. They practice it.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you got to switch it up because we don't always ask you to say the alphabet backwards because that's ridiculous. I can't even do it sober. So whatever. But bending over and coughing, sometimes, you know, that can still happen. Then you have contraband in the jails. But sometimes your body says, I'm actually going to try to process that. And when your body says, I'm going to try to process that, then guess what happens? Well, what happens is it tries to eat through that baggie or that condom or that whatever it is. And sometimes that happens. And you've just swallowed sometimes an eight ball, sometimes a huge
you'll die
eight
then.
Ball.
Yeah, you'll die.
Yes, you will. You will absolutely die.
The drug mules die when they send them across
exactly.
the border. That it, like the balloon pops sometimes.
Yep. Exactly. So yeah. So don't do it because you're going to die.
Dying's bad.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really recover from that.
There's no second act.
No, there's not. So sometimes they don't just swallow drugs. Sometimes they swallow jewelry and diamonds because if someone's going to arrest you, you're like, I didn't take it. I don't have it on me. No, besides the orifice of your body. Imagine fishing that thing out.
That sounds like, no, fishing out. How about pushing it out of your butt? Diamonds are not Ooh. Smooth. Mm.
They're not
they're
soft.
They're pointy.
No, they're not.
Yeah, pointy.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be like passing a kidney stone through your butt.
That doesn't sound comfortable. Not at all.
We're talking about butts too much today already.
Okay, let me get into this nastiness.
Okay.
How about this? So 7-gauge needles, right? So normally when you go get a shot, you're looking at like a 16-gauge needle because they're small, right? So the larger the number of the gauge, the smaller the needle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the larger the number of the gauge, the bigger the needle. So a 7-gauge needle is like a 0.15 inches is what it is about. The inside
of
it.
So it's like almost a millimeter, sort of.
Yeah, I don't do millimeters because I'm American and I suck at that. That conversion is just way too much math. And math
okay, it's about a millimeter and a half is what you're saying.
Okay, yeah, what she said. Yeah, that. Sometimes there have been people that have injected drugs that are sealed in tiny little bags and put them into these 7-gauge needles and inject them under their skin so that when they get into jail, you know how like the birth control in the shoulder, like in the arm?
I have that.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh, that like I couldn't feel that. That's weird to me. But like if you take a knife and you cut that, you can access whatever's under your skin, that stick. Or wherever they injected it, they can access that little baggie of drugs.
Guys used to do this in high school. They would stick needles. What are those? Like push pins? They would put them under like the first layer of their skin. I remember that in high school.
Yes.
And be like weird. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Why? That's too emo. I don't do that.
Why does anybody do anything?
Know.
Did you ever wear lizards for earrings?
No. What did?
Oh my God. I'm going to get so made fun of. I never did this, but I did participate to some extent. So in Florida, we have a lot of lizards. So if you catch them, they hold their mouth open like this. And then if you piss them off, they'll bite. So people would put it on like earrings.
Like real live lizards
like
earrings?
Like real live lizard earrings, yeah.
Oh my God, that's the best.
It's Florida. What do you want? But actually, I do have a creative hiding drug story, but not nearly with as much intelligence as yours. And it wasn't so much that the hiding was well done. It was more the amount of drugs that was hidden on one human being. So the story starts off a little sad. Of course, I was at Cirque du Soleil with my husband, but boyfriend at the time. And I took the risk. I went to do that on a night that I was on call. But to be fair, I had been on call straight for 4 months because there was nobody else in my unit that could do it at the time. And gotcha. I get called out and it's for a unattended death that they suspected to be accidental due to drug overdose, just due to foaming at the mouth. The super sad part of it was this young man lived with like his mom, his grandma, his sisters, his dad, really nice family. They had all gone mm-hmm. to church and come back and discovered him foaming at the mouth. And aww. Like his pants were around his ankles. And we still don't know why. I actually think the reason for that was because he wore baggy pants. That was just the way that he wore them. But of course, they had then a concern that there was evidence of a struggle due to these slouching pants. And I completely understand why a family would feel that way, even though he was literally like foaming at the mouth. I'm investigating this. I'm taking all of my pictures and I get to him. And when you take overall pictures of a victim, guys, you want to hit like a whole bunch of different angles. But the most simple way is you're going to take 90-degree photographs that are like overview of the victim or straight at them so that you can get that like general consensus of the way that they're positioned. So he was half on, half off a couch, knees bent, pants around his ankles. He had a large head of dreadlocks, like a lot of dreadlocks. And I was taking pictures of him. And I noticed when I reviewed the pictures, because sometimes I go back and I make sure that the lighting was right or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I saw something shiny and I thought, oh, let me go back and re-photograph that because it's creating, like, it was blocking elements of him. And I just wanted to make sure that there was, like, you, like we've talked about in previous episodes.
Yeah.
So I go and take the picture and I'm zooming in on the area and I see a little corner.
Oh.
He had hidden a bazillion baggies of drugs in his dreadlocks, in them.
What?
And he had a lot of hair. So when the medical examiner gave us permission to move him, and I had already documented him as was, I move him, drug bags fell out of the tongue of his shoes. He had folded his socks down like we used to when we were kids, the folds of his socks. There was, wow. You know how men's underwear has the hole in the front for men to pull out their dick and pee?
Yeah. It has that like,
He had drugs shoved in that flap.
Was he a drug mule or?
I don't know. That wasn't really my role because we were there to investigate his death. But all I will tell you is there were drugs in his armpits. I know that sounds weird, but there was literally, like, I found drugs in his armpit.
Do you think that this was set up this way, or you think that he actually put these there?
Because it was apparent that they were not fresh.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
They'd been there.
So, like, you know, plastic bags are in, like, your purse, or, like, they start to get, like, opaque from, like, rubbing?
Yeah.
So these were not recently placed on his person.
Wow.
There were drugs behind his watch face.
What?
To have viewed him as he lay when he passed away and to have not seen any of them is truly somewhat impressive to me. There was so much on him.
And the family went to church and they came back and this is what they came back to.
Well, they didn't see all those drugs and it wasn't all the same kind.
But imagine like walking around your house with all this stuff.
I know. And then of course we found a lot more in his bedroom, but the sheer amount that was on him, and just in case you guys are wondering, it was not one kind of drug. There was marijuana, which was not legal anywhere at the time. There was cocaine. There were pills, both of a pharmaceutical grade and club drugs as well. Yeah. He was a walking pharmacy. But not like CVS.
Contraband
not
pharmacy. Like
water. Yeah. Ridiculous. Yeah, it was so many kinds of drugs. It like I am not even thinking of all the areas we found drugs. Insane.
Wow.
So like that's not a crazy evidence story where there was like an item that was insane, but I just find the ability to store drugs on your body. Like
that's insane. Yeah. We've collected like 50-gallon drums because, you know, there's bodies, there's money, there's drugs, there's, you know, all kinds of stuff in that. Mm-hmm. But or an entire bathtub because it was a burnt body and it was like burnt into the bathtub. So you just take the whole entire bathtub.
Oh, how Breaking Bad of them.
I wish I could say I've seen Breaking Bad, but.
Oh, my. You have to watch Breaking Bad. The first episode's not that great. Get past it. You'll have a good time. Trust me. But one other thing does come to mind because you were talking about the prison purse.
Yeah.
One of my very first suicide scenes. I remember it for many, many reasons. So I'm not going to get into the huge details of this victim's death because that can be allocated to a different show. But what's interesting about this case, relevant to our crazy evidence episode, is I was, of course, taking my overall photographs of the house. So she had passed away in the bedroom. So it's really normal when you have a death investigation to be very particular about the room where the person died. Also the whole house, but you know, you want to open every drawer. You want to take a photograph of every drawer. You want to pull out anything that looks suspicious, check it out, see if anything is disturbed. So I was doing this with the main dresser in her room and I pulled open the drawer and I saw this black tube. And I thought, that doesn't look like a gun case or anything. What the hell is that thing? So I'm in the room with several detectives and I open this thing up and I am staring face first at a vagina. It was something called a fleshlight. Do you know what this is?
I don't want to tell you.
Oh, I saw it for myself. I saw it beaver first right in my face.
What the
It's
hell?
Like literally a vagina in a what looks like a hydro flask, but like a canister. And I was immediately red. Immediately red. And I was like, well, to each their own in the bedroom, but it was relatively disturbing to think, oh, what's in here? And then to see a not clean fleshlight.
Oh, the fact that it wasn't clean. No, you can't die when your stuff isn't clean.
I know. That's... And honestly,
ugh.
I feel like we maybe have taken it too far and we should maybe give our audience a break at this point of us.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. If you are still listening, hello. Anyone
thanks
out
for
there?
Staying with us on this journey.
This was quite the journey. We derailed. And this train has just completely, it's off.
Left
it never,
the station.
Never yes.
From fleshlights to carrots to ferrets to prison purses.
To wet wop.
To wet wop. That's
to
right.
To wet wop.
I know. At least we got a little education in there today, Shelley.
There you go. Yeah, we're a little educational. So.
All right. So just to recap, find us on social media at Crime Scene Queens.
Yeah.
Email us hello@crimescenequeens.com. Please rate and review our show only if you liked it, though.
Yeah.
Only if you liked it. And if you're going to commit a crime, do your local CSI unit a favor and leave lots of evidence.
Lots of good, juicy evidence.
Lots of good, juicy evidence. Bye, guys. We love you so much.
Bye. Love you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Till next week.
Crime Scene Queens is a Q Code Media production. Executive producers, David Henning and Steve Wilson. Produced by Ryan Countshouse and edited by Will Tendy.